It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've barbecued loads of different fish. We've made, I've made a chana dal, like little curry, but I also made a green bean courgette. Lovely quick pan curry for you, because I wasn't sure about the chickpeas with your keto.
Yeah. But you know what? The specialist said to me that I can start introducing carbs into
a little bit. Well, you know
and
what?
I thought, can't come here and not eat.
Today's the day.
Yeah.
Today is a good day to have a carb. Delicious.
Come to the garden, because
I'm Nikita has made a steeper.
We're calling it a verbena steeper.
So basically, a steeper is, I'm just making these teas because I love making different teas and just pouring them over ice. Yeah. So this is lemon verbena with rosemary, bit of nasturtium, mint, stuff that I grew
and
on my balcony.
And lemon.
Oh, that's
and a bit
amazing.
Of lemon, lime.
So and did you put the ginger syrup in?
And a bit of ginger syrup.
And yeah. Honey. This is so up your street.
I mean, I know.
Is this?
I'm gassed. This is me. This is me, the glass.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's
oh, that makes me so happy. Let me give you loads of ice.
How did you know?
I don't know. I just felt the day and I felt the energy.
Cheers.
Welcome. Yes. Thank you for coming.
Such a nice way to spend an afternoon.
Wait, Mum, I mean, this is your verbena steeper.
If we were Dave.
If we were Dave. That's how you
So welcome.
Hi.
Everybody.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Welcome, Ali. So who have you brought?
I have brought my bestie. This is Reggie Sharma. We have been friends for over 20 years, I would say. We met working at Radio 1 and ended up moving in together. I would have been 20, like 5, 20. Oh, we had our a joint 25th birthday.
Yeah. Oh, so you're the
so
same age?
So we would have been 24. Yeah, we're nine days apart.
Yeah.
Oh, sistering. Proper like sistering.
Proper sistering.
So I said, what I've cooked for the sistering? Some barbecue fish, because you're a pescatarian.
I'm pescatarian,
And you don't eat beef, and you're keto.
Yeah, I'm keto at the moment, yeah.
Which basically means, well, you have been, but we're going to get a bit carby today,
pull out the carbs today.
So we've made barbecued fish, three different kinds: trevally, mackerel, and snapper. Rub, a little bit of brine, and then barbecued quite hard and fast on the grill.
Yeah.
And then finished with a nasturtium oil, which Makita grew the nasturtiums.
On my balcony, which is called Moon Bar, and so this nasturtium is blazing under the full moon. Blessed nasturtium.
This is so magical nasturtium, and a few nasturtium flowers and lovely fresh herbs. Then there is a little pan curry over there with green beans and courgettes and chili and ginger and garlic and a couple of other little spices. There's a chana dal, chana being chickpeas, which is a chickpea curry. There are sweet potato, caramelized onion and sweet potato roti, a fresh coconut pomegranate. Granite herb, spring onion, lamb's lettuce salad. With a little hibiscus.
We are so blessed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, honestly, thank you so much.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
So nice to be cooked for. I cannot tell you.
And it's my favourite thing to do, so we're all on a win, aren't we?
We've just come back from holidays. We went to Sweden. So basically, I taught my husband and my kids how to fish, because I did a lot of fishing when I was a kid. My dad was a fisherman.
Oh, my goodness.
I love that.
And we spent 2 weeks fishing and didn't catch one fish.
What?
So clearly, I'm a bit out of practice.
like nothing.
Nothing, babe. Nothing.
But
all.
But fishing, I was thinking that fishing is not necessarily about catching the fish. It's the time it's the spent process. Together.
That's what
it?
I was trying to tell them. Like, you've got to enjoy the calm. You're one with nature.
It's true.
And they're just like, where's the fish?
Yeah. Land? I was thinking about stories that we're going to be telling about each other, and there's like so many.
Yeah.
And now you've just mentioned fishing.
Oh my God.
There was one episode in our friendship where she decided that she was presenting on the culture show. She'd pitched an idea of like women in fishing.
Right.
And they were like, oh, can you bring somebody who would never fish?
Yeah.
And we're going to wake them up at 4 a.m. And I was there at 6 a.m. in the morning in waders.
We learned how to fly fish on BBC television.
You must really
I did
love her.
Did you catch something? Okay.
I caught a really tiny fish. That was it. We were trying to catch salmon.
There's a photo of me and Reggie and these two old fellas, old fishermen. And it is, it's gold.
They were really nice. I really like their company, to be honest.
I do think there's something about these days finding ways to spend that kind of quiet, contemplative time together. It's really difficult, actually, getting that kind of time and space.
It really
Would you like a bit of roti?
You know what? I'm going to try a little bit, Can I just say, these flavours are reminding me so much of home.
Oh, people. Where are your family from, Reggie?
They're Punjabi, so they're from North India.
Right.
I mean, we've always grown up cooking and always been around foodies.
We were very lucky, to do the series we did around the Caribbean for the BBC.
And so we
had good, you know, BBC researchers on our ancestry and found out so much. I was wondering if you knew much about yours, Annie.
Yeah, I do. My brother's actually mad into family trees.
Yeah.
So he's done both sides now.
How many siblings have you got?
I'm the youngest of four. It's not that exciting. Like,
no, come on.
My mum's family are from Northern Ireland. My mum grew up on a farm. It was all very, like, there was no money. It was very poor. And they grew up on a pig farm, which is why she's a staunch vegetarian.
Right.
And brought us up to be vegetarian. They all had like 11 brothers and sisters, you know.
Whoa.
Like,
so there's
crazy
a whole heap for you.
A lot of us left. So my grandparents' generation, 60% of them went to England or Canada. Yeah. Everyone just leaves Ireland. Yeah. That's the kind of inevitable path. People just go.
Seeking opportunity.
Is that why, do you think?
It's seeking opportunity. It's not being able to afford to, like, there's no work a lot of the time in Ireland. So you leave to send money home.
There's the Indian-African diasporic connection, but there's also the Irish come into that and the Scottish come into that as well, right? And that Irish, black people, brown people thing. I remember when I first came to London, I didn't really know loads of Irish people until I kind of got to London. And I just remember being amazed at how similar like how much I understood Irish culture, because it's like loud and food and shouty
very religious
and
space.
Hitty.
Yeah.
Radio 1, early noughties. It's kind of like one of the most powerful places in Britain in the media at that time. Like, Radio 1 was the place, the voice that people listened to.
What was it
like? It was Chris Moyle's era.
Yeah.
You know, he really did have the monopoly on radio, breakfast radio. Mm-hmm. Big characters in the station. And me and Reggie both worked in Specialist Music, and we worked in a room which was called what?
G12, but they called it the dark side.
because it was just full of weirdos, basically.
Nice.
Misfits.
Best and place. It was full of amazing weirdos.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, John Peel was in there. He would fall asleep under his newspaper every afternoon.
Yeah.
Annie Nightingale was there with the messiest desk in the room. You know, you had the Dream Team coming in, doing kicky uppies in the corner.
Fabio and Groove Rider.
Joss Peterson. Like,
oh my
what
God,
an
it's
amazing
such a, that's
yeah.
a great
like,
room.
What an amazing room of people. And me and Reggie were just like trying to hold it down, you know, trying to be cool.
I remember the first time I saw Dream Team, and I was like such a garage head anyway. And I was like, oh my God, it's Mikey B.
I mean, that's the thing that, like,
just like trying to talk to them and be like all cool at my desk.
Yeah.
Like,
and also it was trance, so it was like Judge Jules, Dave Pierce.
God,
you used
Jules.
To be into trance, didn't you? So
I was
like
a big Judge Jules fan, That was probably my first like moment where I got starstruck at the Christmas party when I met Judge Jules, and I was like, cannot do it.
No, but those Radio 1 Christmas parties were intense.
Oh my God, babe.
Because I started working Radio 1 when I was 18 at One Extra, and then started doing Radio 1 stuff at 19. And I was so scared, and you, Annie, were so lovely to me.
Oh, thank fuck.
So, and you made my life a hell.
She was like, bitch back then. Who you're talking about?
She was so lovely. I was freaked out. And also, I wanted to talk about the kind of difference between being a kind of radio presenter and a DJ. Mm. And I guess that's why you're in the Weird People room. Mm. Because I think there was, like, you know, there was Sarah Cox, beautiful, brilliant, brilliant broadcaster. Edith was there.
Mm. Yeah.
It was that kind of time. Colin Murray. But Annie felt like the cool girl who knew her shit in the corner. And I was like, who's she? I remember thinking that you stood out. And I wonder if that was intentional for you, to make sure that you stood out in that place, in that kind of world of Radio 1.
I mean, not at all. There was no kind of agenda of how to be. I think it was just kind of how do I... I was hungry and ambitious, without a doubt. And I really wanted my own show. They came up with the whole idea of my show coming from the perspective of the dance floor. So you had all these dance music experts, Pete Tong doing house, Judge Jules doing trance, Dream Team doing garage, Fabian Groovider doing jungle, all of these guys, experts in their field and very revered as DJs. And I was coming at it as someone who wasn't a professional DJ and was just a fan. So they were like, why don't we do a show that is dance music, but way more like from a fan perspective. So it's like, instead of her coming from the booth, she's coming from the floor. Yeah. And it's so it was always kind of more irreverent and less like authoritarian about what music is good and bad. It was like,
and do you think that
more
was
celebratory.
More female than male in its intent or in its...
Actually, you could look back on that and think, well, why couldn't I have been an expert? But the clear thing was I didn't have the experience at that time. So I understand where they were coming from. And I did kind of grow into that place that they were at.
Also, I think the reason that Makita is like found this about you is because having started in the production side at Radio 1, you couldn't really be there as a, have the airs and graces of being like a superstar or now I'm a DJ and whatever. So I always found you carried that through, like you were still Annie that was like in the office, but you happened to just go on the mic every so.
I was so grateful for those 2 years working behind the scenes, because they, well, first of all, they taught me how a good radio show should be made.
Definitely.
They taught me what a producer should do. So when I became a DJ, I knew how the team should work. But also, they helped me be grounded and real, and it was very important.
You see, for me, because I don't really know much about dance music because I'm older. Mm. What I've always, from my sort of age perspective, what I've noticed about you or thought about you is you always just seem to be someone who just loves it. You just love the music. And so it comes from a perspective of inside out rather than ego out.
Yeah.
You know, rather than I'm here, it's more like, oh my God, check out this tune, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Which is what I really respond to, what I really like about you.
Yeah.
And that I always think, I think that's what people respond to in you, is actually you are sort of resolutely yourself. Mm. And I think that's quite a difficult thing to do and thing to maintain. You know what I mean, Reggie? It's like, especially in this world, you know, the world of media for women, I think, well, for everybody, but you know, there's a female issue, I think, for us in this world where, you know, there's always somebody from the outside telling you how to look or how they want you to respond or how they want you to dress. They don't really do that to dudes in the same kind of way. Has that been hard for you to hold on to, Annie?
Well, I think what you end up doing, first of all, it only happened for me. Like, I got the show when I was 26.
Right.
And again, that's another thing I'm so grateful for. So I was able to be fucking Egypt. You know, I was able to make all my mistakes and do all that. And then at 26, I was a little bit older and wiser and knew, kind of knew more about what I wanted and whatever. I also think that I clung to people like Reggie. So when you find people who are real and you know are you know, people you can trust and people are real, you there's an instinct there to keep them close, you know.
So very important, actually.
God, yeah.
I think. Did you feel that responsibility in part as part of your friendship?
Poor
Reggie.
It's
got no, I wonder about that.
I'm the eldest sibling in my family, and I think there's always a level of, like, you want to protect the people around you.
Yeah.
And you want to, like, teach them and help them. So me and Annie lived together. There was only really us two. And we felt like it was just us two kind of against the world. So I think, there's been moments of real talk.
Real talk Reggie is so important. Now, so Real Talk Reggie would say, that person is only talking to you because...
Right.
They would think they can, you know, look better beside you or get something off you.
Right.
And you know, it's never done in any way, cruel way. It's always just quite, you know, but it's like, I think they're not.
Just watch it. Because we both worked in radio and in production, it was also from a creative outlook as well. And like, does this look right? Or is this the right thing you want to go to?
Yeah.
Or how is that going to advantage you?
Is this the path you want to take?
Yeah.
So,
it's interesting because my best friend, Nana Cherry,
yeah.
when she became massively famous, I remember she'd been away on tour for a while and she came back. She said something and I went, no. She said, what? I said, no, fuck off, something. And she went, oh, my God. And she took a little tip and I said, why are you so emotional? She went, no one said no to me for 4 months. I was like, I haven't seen you. Oh my God. Everybody's just been going, yes, Nene. I'm like kissing her ass. I was going, right, well.
Can I ask, is it all right to have seconds?
Yes, have a third.
No, we probably will get to the fourth.
Now I'm the food. That's what it's for.
But I wanted to talk about ambition because I was always really embarrassed to say that I was ambitious. I also didn't think I was because I was so shamed about. Obviously, my career kind of fell into my lap in a way, and then I started, you know, whatever, working. And the more you work, the more you want, I think, and the more you see, the more you're like, okay,
more opportunities you see,
yeah, especially when you realise that you're good at something.
Right.
But I felt so embarrassed. Mainly actually more this round of my career a few years ago when I was like, I want to work again. Yeah. I had to say it out loud to myself for like a few weeks before I could even admit it to mum or anyone or the world. And I wonder why we get so embarrassed about ambition, or maybe that is just me.
I think it's a combination between Britishness.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lack of being able to self-promote in any way. And we conflate ambition with kind of self-promotion. And I also think it's being female.
There's a thing, women. I think we're not meant to want things for ourselves outside of motherhood and marriage and all of those things. Everybody I know, all the women I know have a problem going, I want success.
Yeah,
I want everyone to buy my book. I want everyone
again,
to read.
Again, that people conflate that with confidence.
Yeah.
And I think confidence in women is quite an interesting thing. Yeah. I've been asked a lot about that in my life because I did one interview for The Guardian when I was 20-something. It was one of them Q&As and it was, what are you most proud of? And I answered it quite flippantly, but I just said that I like myself.
Right.
And I swear to God, ever since then, every interview is like, so... This you like
it's
yourself.
Liking yourself.
Tell me about that. What is that? You seem very confident.
Wow.
As if that's some sort
it's
of
like an accusation.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, and then you kind of find yourself defending yourself that I am confident, like I'm comfortable in my skin, and you know I'm very lucky and blah blah.
I like
you're kind
who
of
I apologizing. Am. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I meant to feel like this. I'm so sorry. Awful.
But I think ambition is in there somewhere. Mm. It's in that web, you know, of wanting things for yourself.
And now that you're, because you said you're a week apart. So you're both in your early 40s. Yes. Has your ambition changed? Does it look different?
God,
now
I wish it was early. We're 45 now, baby.
Oh, 45!
Yeah, we're right mid.
In the middle.
I have to say, my 40s have been my favourite decade.
Everyone
I'm
says it.
I'm not going to lie. Like, and actually, going back to what you were saying, I think it's about being fearless. And I think for the first time in my life, in the last year, now I feel like I can dream big. I mean, global, universal.
Yeah, keep going. Like, I say to my, I'm like, let's go big. And then she's like, okay, America. I'm like, oh, not that big. She's like, why not?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm 39 and turning 40 next year. And I've been thinking a lot about like, oh, right. So life actually isn't just forever. And if you want to do things, when are you going to get on with them? And that's kind of, I think, what happened.
Well, I feel like what's happened to me, it feels like it's a mindset. So it's a mindset shift. It's created a change in me, which then means it's had a change effect on everything around me. Even just being here today,
right.
Like that is a change. I would have overthought this. Mm-hmm. I would have completely overthought this coming here. Mm. Probably wouldn't have said yes to you about it, all of that. Mm. Today is a different day. That's and that is part of the change of like thinking bigger and dreaming bigger, allowing yourself to dream.
Changing your vibration.
Completely. My frequency is...
My frequency
is nice right now.
And that stuff really matters.
It really does.
Yeah,
it
really does. What you put out in the world, how you vibrate,
how open you are to
and what you invite in with the words that you speak and and what you put out there, how you treat other human beings, how you treat yourself. People take the cue of how to treat you, how you treat yourself. Right. If you're sitting around beating yourself up, calling yourself names, having a terrible time, people will treat you like shit.
Oh, Andy, let me share something. Sorry, I have to share this. Yeah. My therapist told me this like about 4 months ago. Game changer. She was like, you know why you get discriminated against or why you feel like you get discriminated against or you feel you're in this situation is because you discriminate against yourself. And I went, wait, what do you mean? I don't discriminate against myself. And she went, what you're doing is you've had all of this discrimination baggage forever and you've never realized it, but you've taken it on. Mm. So you see yourself
how they see you.
Right.
And then that's how you present yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
She did that. next day, she was like, so I'm going to, for a week, I want you to present yourself the way you think that you are, like, or you want to be. Yeah.
Speaking to yourself in the mirror.
Yeah. Speaking to myself in the mirror.
Telling yourself you could deserve good things.
And yeah,
that's
gorgeous.
What it is hard.
No, just really
like,
hard.
Just
really
even
hard.
Look at yourself and saying, you're beautiful. Like, yeah. Are you crazy? Yeah. How do I say that?
Isn't it funny how quickly we go, oh, don't be ridiculous, don't be silly. Yeah. Like,
yeah, but game changer.
I remember when I first started having therapy years ago, my therapist saying to me, "What do you walk down the road and call yourself names?" And I went, oh, how do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that? I've never told anybody that. And she said, lots of people do that. I was like, right. Do they?
Right.
I thought it was just me, you yeah. know. And it was a facet of my eating disorder and some of the problems I was having.
Yeah.
So I was literally, and I didn't even really know I was doing it. And she put it into words and I went, oh my God, I do that. And then how do you know that?
Yeah.
And I had to like learn how to stop doing that and change the internal tape, the words that I spoke to myself.
Yeah.
And the way the world changed when that happened was astonishing to me. I couldn't believe it.
It's also really quick, isn't it? I had a lot talking about men being slightly, feeling a certain way about women being successful or wanting success. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was very successful really young and all the boys around me would just make jokes about it, make it very small, pretend it wasn't a thing.
So you felt like you had to do the same?
No, so I was like, yeah, I'm not even really successful. I'm not really, I'm not on a big
Shut
TV show.
It doesn't
matter. And I don't really have a career. Bang, then I didn't. Do you know what I mean? It's like it went because I didn't believe I should have.
You can talk yourself.
Or that it even was a thing.
Talk yourself in and out of anything.
Suddenly I was like, oh, now I have nothing. Well done. I can't believe I managed to do that.
Wow.
Then it was just my thoughts didn't believe that anything was real. So I'm so happy we're having this conversation about what changing your frequency can actually do.
It's fascinating.
Because it is. Physics. It's actual physics.
Mm. It's the law.
It's the law.
Uh-oh.
It's law. It's law.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That thing you just said, Reg, you really struck a note with me of how hard it is when you look at it. And actually, the things that make you cry, like the things that bring a tear to your eye, the things that make you feel like you're 5 years old, telling yourself you're beautiful, that you matter, all of those things.
That
and
inner
I've always said to people, the most insidious thing about discrimination for me is not the names that people call me or you used to call me when I was a kid at school or all of that stuff. It's that I believed it and that I held it and it's the and then internalized it and then put that back out. And I think that was the most, that is the most terrible consequence of discrimination or bigotry or whatever it, you know, for whatever reason that you're having that situation is that you hold it in your spirit and you hold it in your heart. And to divest yourself of that takes work, right?
It does take work. And I, you know, I was committed to it. I did it and I saw the change happen.
It's the process of kind of getting to know yourself all over again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you're kind of meeting a new version.
Yeah.
Well, it's always been there, obviously,
yeah.
but it's kind of like getting rid of the, it must be so much clarity.
This is the calmest I've ever felt in my life.
Who is this therapist and where is she?
Reggie's got her very busy now.
She's introduced everyone in the door.
No, I hear you.
Obviously, it's like plagiarism. I just tell everybody her advice.
Oh, no, it's beautiful, though. It's beautiful.
It's good to share it.
I do want to say, while we're at this point in this conversation, that, you know, however you two both feel about yourselves and the success and what you've done, please know that when you were both on TV and everything that you've done, and even if it wasn't on TV, even if it was just out and about, you guys have always been inspiring. Yes. Like, to see you, I remember Andy seeing you, and I remember meeting you, and I just, you know what, to have gone through colorism and see somebody who's dark-skinned and be represented and a woman was just, but I feel like it as well, but it gave you hope, options, and it gave you dreams. You know what I mean? And I thought that was so important. And seeing you on E4, remember that, just being like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it was that. That so thank you. But like, maybe you might hear it more now, or maybe you heard it already. But I wanted to say that because I think it really means a lot to me
because, you know, back then, so you guys are 45, you're about to turn 40. I'm 60. Yeah. I turned 60 this year.
Congratulations.
And it really does just get better all the time, girls. Yes. I'm here to tell you.
I'm so excited.
It really does. It's extraordinary. Mm. I feel the best I've ever felt in life. I never expected that. I never expected to be 60 going, woo, what is the next? And being my full height. And my batty and feeling good and yes. And, do you know what I mean?
Yes,
literally.
I do. Oh,
I'm
my
walking
God.
Walking down the road thinking,
like how
that's right, that's correct. Yes, thank you very much.
But do you think it's because you've let go of some of the stuff that we were talking about?
I've divested myself so much stuff. I am free now.
Yeah, that's it. That's how I feel.
Freedom. I am free now. And I think I also, I've learned so much, you know, every year of life, I feel so grateful. And, you know, the older we get, the more people we've lost, I'm sure. Yeah. Everyone around this table has lost people that were really important to them. Yeah. And the more you lose people, the more you value life and the moments. It's like every day. What is it Aunt Enid says?
Oh, my God. We were in Antigua. And we hand-delivered my mum's cookbook to
my auntie.
She comes out of her door and me and my mum and my cousin Zillary were walking up the road and she just went, oh, thank God for life. That's what she said. Every morning. And she's 88 on a cane. And she lost her husband this year of 60 years. Whoa. She said, thank God for life. And I was like, right.
Oh, I need to keep that.
Oh, it's beautiful. And then she sat with my book, kept like running her fingers over all of the pictures and the stories and her mother's recipes, the recipe that's in the book. And I, you know, that was like one of the most important moments ever for me to see my auntie, see my mum with my book, you know.
Yeah.
I loved writing. Yeah. Yeah. Do you love it, right, Annie?
I do love writing. It kind of felt like coming home, weirdly. I didn't know how it was going to feel to write a book, but I'd always wanted to.
Mm-hmm. And it's a novel, right?
It's a novel, yeah.
Yeah.
But not, So, but also more than one? Are you writing?
Yeah, there's two.
Yeah, there's two.
The second one just came out. So, yeah, it was, the first one was a kind of direct reaction to turning 40 and being like, I want to live, I want to do more, my job is great, but I feel like a little like I'm coasting. I just felt like I wasn't serving the audience I had enough. Like, I felt like I should have been out at every gig. I should be trawling the blogs for the best, you know, the new hot thing.
Yeah.
And I was, like, kind of in the throes of young motherhood, as in the kids were young, and was kind of just very stressed and didn't feel like I had enough time to give to Radio 1, and also felt like I'd been doing it for 17 years.
Oh, my God.
And maybe it was good to...
Time.
Right.
But it's so
I had
hard.
An urge to learn, basically. Yes. I wanted to learn
and
something.
Transition. New.
Thank you.
But how hard is it to leave somewhere like Radio 1?
I didn't find it hard. And I think that's because I was there for so long. Mm. And I felt like I'd kind of done everything I wanted to do there. So I kind of gave this line when I was leaving about like leaving the party when it's still happening. Like the kind
right.
of. And it really, honestly, it really felt like that. Like it was good. It was good vibes. And I liked the idea of leaving while I had goodwill and that was reciprocated.
Oh, well,
and
the party's still good. You don't want to be there at the end with the tizer and the whiskey, do you?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You want to go
while shit in the corner.
Finish a glass of champagne and float through the door.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
So totally. When I left, I had been like my first book was out. So I'd spent the last couple of years at Radio 1 kind of squirreling time trying to write this novel. I went on a writing course for 6 months and that helped me.
Was that about structure and how to really craft?
Exactly. Yes. I was like the most nerdy, mature student ever. I was like, teacher, teacher. Like, I was, I loved my teacher so much. It was such a buzz to learn.
What a lovely thing.
It was such a buzz. Yeah. And it was just mine.
It was a beautiful thing to feel like I was learning.
It was such a buzz
again.
To learn. And also, it was quite, it felt quite indulgent.
Especially because you had children.
Was, I felt needed. There was a lot of need.
And like, asking children. For stuff. Yeah.
A lot of people, production teams and agents and
asking just, for stuff.
And the career was so busy and we kept taking things on that were great, but not really things I'd kind of dreamt of doing. You know, you kind of get swept away. So we started doing, I had this brand called AMP, Animat Presents. We started putting on conferences, entire conferences in London.
Oh, like, my God, I remember.
Where we, like, the whole of Camden is full of gigs and we're curating all these gigs and all these talks. And it was a lot. I was doing festivals. It was like, this was my time.
Yeah.
Just for me. And I, no one knew.
And feeding another bit of your intellect.
Right, exactly. So Mother, Mother, my first book kind of came out of those couple of years. And then I left Radio 1 and gave myself a bit more time to write.
Did you enjoy the process?
Which was actually quite hard because then I had like 5 hours a day to write. And I was like,
totally.
Totally.
I mean, I'm going to make myself a cup of tea.
Totally. You're like, oh, so I just have to do this now.
Yeah. Totally. And also forgot that I'd left, like, I'm naturally like completely extrovert and love being around people and love working with people and I've always done that. And suddenly I just, the loneliest job in the world.
Right.
I'm in a fucking shed at the end of my garden on my own with just rattling around my own brain. Yeah, I found that really hard.
You settled into it, though, a rhythm.
I did. Well, and I've also kind of learned that I need now to kind of make sure that I have people and I have, you know, I'm seeing people and I'm going out the house and going for walks and meeting people.
Oh, yeah, don't you remember we were talking about this, the beauty of having a life. And I think, I swear to God, it's freelance. It's freelance. It makes you feel like there is nothing you should ever do other than get to the next job or go to work or build something next.
Right. And say yes. Keep saying yes to everything. You can't, you can't justify having an afternoon off.
God, no.
So
what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Visit a mate? Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah. I should be making sure a new project's starting. And we were talking about that when I saw it at the beginning of the year. We were like, it's nice to just give yourself a life. And now I've got really into like a bike ride on my own for a few hours.
Oh, gorgeous.
It's just like, why not?
You got to Ali Pally, don't you? That's Nikita's like touchstone. Ali Pally, she goes up to the top.
Yes. Do you guys have this? Okay, so Oprah talks about this incredible, they ask her her favourite guest she ever interviewed, and she's like, well, that's quite a lot, it was like 35,000 people, and she says it was this incredible woman who went through hell in Nigeria, I think it was, as a child. She was married, abused, raped, and bore 5 or 6 children, but she kept trying to go to school. Long story short, she gets herself to school, and she goes back to this rock in Nigeria to say, I got myself to school, I taught myself to write, it's happening. And then her story evolves and she basically becomes a professor, and she's still, everything she does, every achievement or everything that just she said she was going
to
do, you were saying, she goes back to the rock. And my rock is Ali Pally. Wow. I don't know why.
She's like, Mom, I'm going to the rock. I need to go.
Oh my God, Ali Pally, then I've done this.
That's amazing.
But I think a touchstone is good, or at least somewhere to go, I did this now. Yeah. And I want to do this now.
Yeah.
To have that conversation with yourself.
It's good, important. You know, because we're talking about ambition and actually and you know, well, you are ambitious, and I think we all are around this table. I want things for myself, and I want more. I want the world to be bigger. I want to inhabit more of it and see more of it.
Do things for more
feel
people.
Feel the whole thing while I'm still here and alive. Because, you know, it's a brief moment, and then we're dead, you know? You can get so caught up in that that you don't take a moment to savour the joy of what you've achieved.
I've had an epiphany about ambition, right? Because you kind of, when you think ambition, you think pencil skirts, heels,
working girl.
You know, whatever. And like, just like, you also think up, like working up, next rung on the ladder, harder, bigger, more tickets, more fucking listeners, all that shit.
Yeah.
But actually, I have become ambitious for something completely different.
Yes.
So it's the idea of still being ambitious, but for being ambitious for what is best for you at that time.
And your heart.
I am ambitious for contentment.
Yes.
And for a sense of wanting to learn. So the kind of stimulation, like my brain to be stimulated, to be learning all the time, but also a kind of overall sense of contentment. And it's like, okay, so how can I work to get that?
It changes what you do.
I have this thing, I call it breathing the good, clean air at the top of the mountain. Mm. That feeling every now and again, you know, you think, you feel your lungs fill up with this sense of possibility and a kind of settling.
Mm.
It's like I can feel a bit settling in my bones, do you know what I mean? And it's like a moment of stillness before I move again and move into the next thing
I
that I'm going to do.
That.
Do you know what I mean?
So that's your rock.
That's my rock.
And that's why I go to Ali Pally, because it's high up. It is a mountain.
It is.
And I love that you can see the city. You know,
you know what I mean? Yeah, because you see yourself in it then.
Yes.
You feel grounded. You know your place.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I don't have kids. I'm not married. Mm. And that's never been like massively important to me. But having to admit to myself now that it's something I want, God, that's been really,
do you,
really
because
hard.
You have done that without The Rock. I mean, The Rock.
I haven't gone to The Rock to see it.
Oh my
it
God!
Yet.
Okay.
So. Have you not stayed at The Rock?
So no, when you stay at The Rock, it's indelible.
Then it's
indelible.
Do you, Makita? Do you equate being married and having to? Do you think those two things have to be the same?
No, but I do want both, and I know how you feel about marriage.
I mean, it's all right.
No, she's
not about it.
What a self.
I'm not against it for other people. I just can't be arsed.
Right. Mm. So how did you feel, Ellie, recently? Your beautiful wedding.
I like waiting.
I was 100% with Andy. I was not bothered at all about getting married. I had two children out of wedlock.
Oh, so right. So you were,
I know.
So you're with your partner and still didn't think about that.
No desire to be married. And then I let them have his name. I don't know why we do that. It's annoying.
Don't worry, my mum didn't. I'm an Oliver.
I love that.
Fucking did the labour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
whatever, mate.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so I let them have his name. I didn't take his name. So it's kind of 5 years down the line from having kids, and I was just like, I want to have their name. And I was also 39, and part of me was like, it'd be kind of fun to get married now, because we're in it. This is it. I know this is it. I love a party. It was quite like logistical. It was kind of like, am I ever going to be able to have a party? Of course I am. I can justify having a party anytime, as you know.
That's been most of your career.
Yeah. How can I devise another party? Let's get married and invite everyone we love. Mm. So I had 3 weddings.
I know.
You had 3 weddings?
I had one, like, little one, you know, in the registry office.
See, that I can respect that.
That was amazing. I had a Ibiza wedding.
Yeah. Big fatty.
And then I had a big rave in London.
Fatty. Two fatties and a small one.
Yeah, 2 fatties and a small
one. I like it. So, if I was going to do it, it would be along those kind
think
of lines,
of the party,
I would
Auntie.
Say. I mean, I'll just have the party.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
I don't,
you don't
want
have the legal, the legally bi- the legal
can
binding.
Can I just say, though, okay, can we just also add that Annie found a brilliant, wonderful, kind man?
You have a lovely husband.
Yeah.
I've met
Tom
him.
Tom is the
he's best. Guy. He's really, I met him. Lovely.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah,
he's sweet, bad. Good, kind, lovely man, I felt.
Yorkshire man.
This is interesting because you've got 2 boys, right?
I do.
I mean, it's a funny world right now. You know, we're trying to get grown men who are not toxic. Awful. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you've got a great man in the house.
I have a great man
him.
In the house who's a very good role model.
What do you think
about? And
he's
a feminist and is very happy. You know, I am a working mom and I always go on about it to them, like how much I enjoy my work and how important it is for me to work. They see that. It's quite equal at home.
Yeah.
Well, okay, to be brutally honest, I probably do more of the domestic work at home.
Yeah,
picking up pants. I think I do.
Really?
I think I'd like to think that it was equal, but it's not for a lack of, I don't know.
Do you know what? I think it's taken time for you both to adjust to how that works because you were both at
sort of domesticity
levels.
He's 6 years, 7 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So I have to remember that he's, I'm a bit...
Still growing.
He's still growing. Yeah, and like it's funny, that's the joke. He's like, look, I was able to, you know, I booked a guy to come and fix the boiler and it's fixed. See? Grow.
Yeah. You know, celebrate that.
Yeah, no, totally. And like this thing about being a mom that I've learned is that you have your ways of doing things, which are obviously right.
Yeah.
he has his way of doing things, which are not your way. I'm not going to say they're wrong, but there
they're
is
not
way.
Your way.
So you, what if you want him to do the shit, you have to relinquish control and let him do the shit.
His way.
Accept
and
the outcome.
And there you go. Secrets to a happy marriage.
Which
from
means,
Annie Mac. Thank you.
Which means
you.
McDonald's for dinner.
Obviously, it's the musical love story of our time, Annie Mac and Toddley T.
Yeah.
Did you meet interviewing him?
I met him for the first time at Fabric, I think.
Okay.
And then the flirtation started when he came in to Radio 1 and I interviewed him.
So
and
that
then
is
I,
on tape.
That is on tape.
Oh, that's so sweet. What a thing to have, though.
It's
early flirtation with your husband on tape.
Yeah, it's mortifying. And then he had this thing called TTV, which was his own YouTube channel. Yeah. And he interviewed me at Warehouse Project.
I remember.
And that was even, because that was on video, and it was even more for a TV. That's nowhere to be found. What, thank God.
What did Annie say about him when in the early days of meeting? Did she say, I like someone?
You knew. Yeah, I mean, him. I knew him anyway as well. It was just obvious they both liked each other, and it was just cute. And she deserved to be with somebody. I was like, excited for her, because the thing is, when she was single, she's always ringing me every day, and I was getting all of her attention.
So had you been single for a minute?
No, not at all. I was going out with someone for 3 years, the end of my 20s, who was a radio producer at Radio 1, and then I split up with him when I was 30 and went out with some other guy, a very nice DJ guy, for a bit, on and off for a year. And then I was with T, so it was like bam, 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 straight. Wow. And I was like, there's no way this is going to last. He actually was the one who was like, why are you being so fixated with age? I don't care. Why should you? Like, stop caring.
And
I
was like, one. That's why.
Yeah, but when I'm 40, you're going to be 33. So I couldn't stop projecting about what it would be like in the future.
Yeah, fear.
Also, it's the culture of it as well. Like, women aren't really supposed to date men who are younger.
Like, what was the other way around? If the other way around, no one would have thought about it. Neither would you, neither would he. Nothing. Nobody would have thought about it.
7 years is actually not. I think that's most of my auntie and uncles that it's like 7 years, but because it's the man that's older, we don't even discuss it.
But yeah, so then we went on to have kids, and Reggie's the fairy godmother of the kids.
This is my favourite story ever. Annie's not religious, and so I was always hoping that somebody would let me be their godmother, because I'm like desperate for kids and being around kids. And she never asked me, and I just thought, that's a bit weird, but I'll stop hinting anyway. And I think I did actually ask you. I thought it's so hypocritical if I'm not religious.
I didn't. Yeah. I felt like you said that kind of weird to do godparents.
Godparents are a whole thing.
Yeah.
But then you should tell a story, because you were there. I mean, they told you and not me the story.
Riley, really. My youngest, basically was like, is Reggie my fairy godmother? And I was like, yes, she is.
They'd gone to school or something, and I think they were talking about godparents, and they were like, do we have one or anything?
Yeah, that was it.
And then he was like, well, who's our godmother? And then Riley was like, I think Reggie should be our godmother, because she's our fairy godmother.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Like, but to be called a fairy godmother.
Also, to be so on point. To be chosen by the child is the greatest honour. Yeah. I've been chosen twice by two kids.
Oh, really?
That's so lovely.
And they called Mabel, now his youngest, called me when she was 11, about 10 or 11, and her Nana and Cam had been flying a lot. And Mabel went, what happens when one of these planes goes down?
That's so Mabel.
And Nana went, I suppose you'd go to your godmother or godfather. And she said, and who's that? And she went, you haven't got one. And Mabel went, oh, my God, like, got really panicking. Yeah. And I said, well, why don't you just choose one? Yeah. So she called me and she said, will you be my godmother?
Oh, my God, that's so...
And I just was like...
And
I was just like... And then Nana came on the phone and she went, you're crying. And then my newest goddaughter, who is amazing as well, who's another incredible singer, actually. She had a godmother, but she hadn't seen her for like 12 years or something. She said to her dad, I need a new godmother because I don't even see that woman. Yeah. And he said, do you think Andy would be my godmother? And he went, call her. So I went and I met her. We were just doing a thing. And she said, I need to talk to you. And I thought, my God, what's happened? Something awful. And she was like, will you be my godmother? And again, I started crying.
I'm going to change my Instagram bio to appointments open. I need to let people know.
If you want me to be your godmother.
So family's really important to you, Reggie?
Yeah, I think it always has been. And I think it's community, isn't it?
Yes. Like,
it's the first people you love. It's the first people you learn from. It's the first people who really rip you apart and teach you about yourself. They're your first mirrors as well. Do you know what I mean? And I think I took that in my life. And that's how I try to treat everybody in my circle as family. So that's why I think when I moved to London as well, and me and Annie became friends, like, it was straight away was like, we're family. Like, we'd never said it, but we just knew it.
You're a very familial energy, though. I mean, literally, you started talking about Tupperware when you were 30 seconds in the door. This, to me, is a signifier. Totally. You know, there are signs for people. I'm like, I like you. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just an energy.
And I think you're naturally, you're really naturally a nurturer. Like, it's in you to do that. It's part of who you are. I feel like that family that you make is really interesting to me.
We
both arrived here together, separately from different places. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, that stuff is what makes... You have to make a new home where you are. Like, if this is going to be your home, what is home? Home is family. So you have have to construct that out of what you've got.
Yes. Yeah. And there's something really beautiful about the people you choose. And
yeah, because yeah. we have so many mutual friends and, yeah. and they've been our friends for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that's like sort of 15, 20 years now. Oh my God. And I was wondering if you had friendships that are even further back yeah. that are yes. still in your life, like core, old school, yes. primary
yeah,
school.
She does, yeah.
I do. Really? I do. Wow. I've got two girls who I've known since I was four.
Oh, yeah.
Who I still see. That's really amazing because they know you inside out. They know everything about you, all of your family's dramas, everything.
Yeah, and they share your history.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Now that you kind of were talking about like changing, I suppose, intent. I've been thinking about this a lot, haven't we? Mm. Not what are we doing next, why?
Mm. And how.
Yeah,
interesting. The why.
Not, yeah. Let's do a podcast, but why?
Yeah.
And let's
it's so important.
Do this. What's yes, the intention?
So why is your
intention? I wish I'd thought of that a lot earlier.
I just found Oprah earlier, I think.
Yeah.
I just,
bless Oprah.
She just saved my life 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Oprah, by the way?
No.
Oh my God, imagine.
Okay. Yeah. I went to Myra Angelou. I went to Myra Angelou's house.
No!
What? I went to Myra Angelou's house and interviewed her. And then I said to her, do you know a really good restaurant? She invited us back for dinner that night.
No, yeah, she yeah, did. Yeah.
We had dinner. Me and my friend Nick had dinner. And we sat in her, like, summer house. And she told me stories about cicadas.
Oh,
and
my God,
beautiful
Andy.
Things. Yeah, I literally, it was the most extraordinary night of my life. I was just like that.
You should write that down.
She told me something that I will never forget. Every time she went to write a new book, she would have to check herself into a really, really shit motel.
Brilliant.
She said, not a hotel, but a motel. Because, and it had to be really bad, because if there was anything on the wall, even a vague thought about art, she would stand there looking at that instead of writing.
Right.
So she'd have to turn the fire instructions to the wall. And wow. she was like, the only way she could write. And every time she went to write a new book, she thought she was going to get found out to be a fraud. She was like, this is the time. You know that voice, she had that incredible voice. Yeah. I always thought this was the time they would discover that I was a fake. And I was like...
Angelou even.
Yeah, yeah, if the doctor, if the good doctor even thought that, then we all can allow ourselves that fluctuation, that flurry of nerves and insecurity and do it anyway.
Yeah, it's a lesson in endurance. It's like if you endure, if you have the intent and you know you're doing what you intend to do and you endure, then you will always, I think, succeed.
It's something we've really had to think about.
Yeah.
Like, what is being more successful and what is having more and what does that really mean?
More of what?
And more of what, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's completely changed the things we do. I think just after the Caribbean, it just changes when you make work that is felt. And it makes you never want to not do that again.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything must be meaningful.
Yes.
Yes. Or else what's the point?
This has been meaningful.
This really
has
been
meaningful.
You are so
good. That was good, wasn't it? That was good.
Wasn't that good?
From one world class to another. Ratings. Seriously.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for bringing
thank you so much.
I love it.
Thank you.
Well, I had tears in my eyes when Reggie said that to us about how important seeing us in both of our careers on screen, what it meant to her as a woman of colour.
It means a lot to have something said to you like that from women that you respect in the world that you've worked in, and they know how hard it is to make impact and to feel valued. And sometimes I'm like, you know what, if someone like Reggie and Annie think I'm doing the right things, then I'm doing the right things.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that was two of my favourite hours I've ever spent with people. That was the most wonderful time. I'm a little bit more in love with both of them.
Yeah.
A little bit more in love with Annie, and I've fallen in love with Reggie.
And then a little bit more in love with the idea of asking people we love to bring someone they love.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, now I know Reggie. She's down the road.
Yeah.
She's a producer in my industry. She's a wonderful, kind, loving woman.
She's just gone to see her grandparents' bench, which is just up the road. It's like all these connections happen. Unexpected kind of bridges to humanity and to each other that are so lovely, and it's like it literally warms the cockles of my heart.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you,
Rachel. Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Rachel.
Brighten up our world.
Come
today.
Back soon. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that?
Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.